Hello, this is WMUK's Let's Hear It, Music of the Moment in West Michigan. I'm Kara Lawrence, glad you could come along tonight to go behind the scenes with Old Wicked Songs, the Gilmore International Keyboard Festival's theater offering through May 18th. It's a two-man play starring Keith Baker as the professor and Nick Mueller as the student. D. Terry Williams is the director. The two actors and the director joined me earlier today to talk about Old Wicked Songs, which was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize for Drama in 1996 and features songs by Robert Schumann. It's a perfect fit for the Gilmore International Keyboard Festival, which has now established a long collaboration with director D. Terry Williams.
Well, you're right. It's a joyful collaboration. This is my fourth project with the Gilmore over the last four festivals. And the last one I did was a collaboration with the Gilmore and the Civic Theater, Moises Kaufman's play, 33 Variations. Prior to that, I did an original piece written by Judy Mays about the life of Clara Schumann. My wife Sharon Williams played Clara, and she was supported by her good colleague Laurie Sims, who played the music of Clara and Robert Schumann. And this piece, Old Wicked Songs, is a wonderful play by a brilliant playwright, John Marins. And we were very fortunate to get Keith Baker, who had played the role 6 years ago, played the role of Professor Mosh Khan. And after auditioning in New York and Chicago for the other actor, the young Stephen Hoffman, I was fortunate enough to find him locally, an alum of our School of Music. Nick Mueller is a graduate of Portage Northern High School, and it was his high school music teacher, Catherine Walker Adams, who made me aware of Nick being in the community and still working at Western, running Gold Company 2. And so last summer, Nick and I got together, and it was clear from his audition that he was perfect for the role of Stephen. And so we started working together, Nick and I did, in January, and then Keith arrived in early April, and it all came together just beautifully.
Perhaps you could also give us a summary of the story, what the drama is here between these just two characters.
Right. Well, it's set in Vienna in 1986, and Marins set it there because it's during the campaign for the presidency, and the person of Kurt Waldheim was a very controversial candidate because of his former past. Many people considered him a member of the Nazi Party and not appropriate to be president. But anyway, he won the election. And that campaign is the background, as well as Vienna itself, for the play in 1986. And this young American piano prodigy, Stephen Hoffman, comes to study with a famous pianist, Herr Schiller, in Vienna, only to find that Schiller won't take any student until he or she studies voice for 3 months with a Professor Mosh Khan. Schiller believes that to be an effective concert pianist or accompanist, that you have to respect the voice, learn how to use your voice, learn how to be an accompanist, respect both the singer and the accompanist. And Stephen thinks this is a waste of time. He and Mosh Khan lock horns from the very beginning of their relationship. And then over the 3 months, we see a radical change in both men. And secrets are revealed during their journey of working together as not only professor and student, but there's a sort of a father-son bonding, a mentor-mentee bonding, and a lot of intense moments occur in the play, a lot of humor in the play, but these secrets keep us engaged as they are revealed secrets that they both are keeping to themselves.
Now, the play is really striking in that music plays a huge role.
Well,
it's part of the storyline.
Robert Schumann's brilliant song cycle, the Dichte Liebe, is really the third character in the play, because that's the music that Moshe Kahn insists that Stephen understand and learn. And they bridge all the scenes together, those songs. And the essential theme of those songs is the juxtaposition of joy and sadness, which both characters totally, well, Moshe Kahn totally understands because he's lived that. And his goal is to get Stephen to understand that to really be, all great art is a mixture of joy and sadness.
Well, maybe I can bring it over to Keith Baker and Nick Mueller here. Keith, some of my favorite movies and plays have this small two-person dynamic or three persons where what becomes so intense about the experience is the evolving nature of the relationship. It's not about bangs and explosions and pratfalls. It's about the development of this emotional depth and what's going on between just two characters. So I imagine that drew you to this, and you have experience in this role before. Maybe you could talk about that.
I didn't know anything about the play before I met John Marins,
the playwright.
And he was introduced to me by an agent friend of mine in New York, and who said that I know of a play that you ought to do, and I know the playwright, and can I put the two of you together? So John and I finally, after about 2.5 years of jockeying schedules and possibilities, because at my theater we have, obviously we have our season, and this, the possibility of doing this just didn't really appear for a while. And so it took a bit for John and I to get together. And then we finally did, and I was able to place it in the season, and he was able to come down and direct it, which was one of the things that was important, because he didn't direct it off-Broadway and had never directed any production of it and really wanted to, because there are certain values and certain things that he felt had not been achieved yet and that he wanted to really try to make happen. So we got together, and when we did, we found that we had this extensive personal history that we both knew about and both experienced, having to do with opera, music, Vienna. My mother was an opera singer growing up in New York with at a period of time when there was there were all these refugees from Germany, Italy, everywhere in Europe, these musicians who brought that tradition with them. And my mother studied with many of them, and I used to always go. And so I saw these people and began to understand these people and see what it was. And there were Moshe Kahns, Professor Moshe Kahns, everywhere, because these were people that treated this music and this tradition that they had as something utterly sacred. That's kind of gone now. I mean, that specific tradition, it's been passed on in some way, but a lot of it is gone in the sense of the specific passion that they brought to their work and to their understanding of the music. And so John and I had a whole lot of things in common, we found. And the role requires several things which are not easy to cast. You've got to be able to speak German.
That's one.
You've got to be able to play the piano, play classical piano.
Two.
You know, and you've got to be able to act the part, and you've got to sing in German and play. And things. That's not terribly easy to cast around, which is one of the reasons the play isn't done very often. And it just happens to be something that I those things I was able to do. So it worked out very well with John. We did it at my theater about 6 years ago, very successfully, and it was a very happy collaboration. And I was so happy when Terry called me about the possibility of doing it again, because it's just one of those roles that, you know, it's yours. I feel, to some extent, that the role is mine, you know, in a way. And so I love it a great deal, and it's also one of those roles which I've really noticed from this audience at Farmer's Alley. I've been going to the Gilmore concerts while I've been here, and these people approach me and talk about this play. And the way they talk about it is with something happened to them while watching the play. Something occurred in their lives. There was some sense of renewal or rejuvenation or lift in what they had experienced. And you just don't find plays like that, that in roles that, you know, go into that territory that often.
Well, I think a lot of these people are going to concerts by some of the most polished performers in the world, and you provide a glimpse of the struggle that those people in tuxes and tails on the stage have actually gone through.
Right.
And so that's a perfect enhancement of the whole festival to see a play.
Yeah. I don't know of a more perfect choice.
Yeah. I also think that it's the audiences have been conditioned over the years since the Gilmore started in 1991, and they have become even more sophisticated. And we've always had sophisticated audiences in Kalamazoo for not just theater and music, but art and dance and so on. I think they bring that sophistication and cultural awareness, musical awareness, acting awareness, singing awareness to their presence in that theater. I watch the audience at each performance, and they get it. I mean, and not just the drama. They get all the levels of the play. And our first talk back, which was a week ago Sunday, all of us were impressed with the number of people that stayed. Only a dozen or so people left. And most of the audience stayed and were engaged, and I had to sort of cut the discussion off, or we would have been there much longer. They had wonderful questions, wonderful comments that revealed that level of education and experience and concert-going experience.
My guests are director D. Terry Williams and actors Keith Baker and Nick Mueller from Old Wicked Songs, which continues through May 18th at Farmer's Alley Theater. And details available right now online at thegilmore.com or farmersalleytheater.com. Well, Nick, it's your turn. As you're working with some seasoned professionals here, what have you gained from this experience so far?
My experience so far has been invaluable. I went to the School of Music here at Western Michigan University and got my degree in jazz studies. And I have had classical piano training. I guess to put the incorrect word on it as a prerequisite for some of my other studies, but to be perfectly honest, I haven't delved this deep into the study of classical music and the emotion and the meaning of it. And so this has truly been a life-changing experience for me to be here and to come to a role that's very demanding in an acting sense, to portray this kind of complex, quirky character that has to change a lot throughout the course of the story and has to do a lot of things on stage that demand a lot of focus, perform a lot of classical music, classical singing, and interact in a way that I've never had the pleasure of acting before.
It sounds like your character might be a little on the unlikable side at first.
Yes.
And that's hard to portray and still get the audience to come with you, I would think.
Yeah, well, there is a lot of comedic relief early on, and as snarky and sarcastic and arrogant as Stephen's character is in the beginning, I think there's still a naivety to his personality that makes it okay, because he's so fresh, and even though he's 25 years old, he has so much to learn. And the amazing thing about the story is we get to see that change, and we get to see visualize the experiences, very shocking experiences that he goes through as a person, and how that changes him, and how he formulates his beliefs and views on the world. And through that, there's this very strong bond between Professor Mosh Khan and Stephen.
All right. When he hears the first song of the song cycle, Dichterliebe, or A Poet's Love, how does it strike him?
Well, he sees it as just kind of just not important. You know, Stephen does not care how a singer feels. And that's one of Stephen's lines in the very first scene. And that's something that he has to learn, that this feeling of music is so important to develop for yourself, and what the feeling of music and art and beauty and aesthetics, what that is for yourself. And Stephen doesn't know that yet. And so in the second scene, there's a lot of locked horns, as Terry said, and there's a lot of the sarcasm thrown back and forth, but it all changes in the end.
Well, let's hear some of the music that gets him started down this path of self-enlightenment. And we'll come back with Nick Mueller, Keith Baker, and Terry Williams of Old Wicked Songs. That's the opening of Dichterliebe by Robert Schumann in a recording by Peter Schreier and Wolfgang Sawallisch. But here in the studio are Nick Mueller and Keith Baker, who together perform music from Dichterliebe in the course of a play, Old Wicked Songs. And as if you've been listening already, you know that the music is a catalyst for this relationship. Nick, you alluded to some blow-ups in the second scene, or, you know, where things really get heated. Your character needs to get through to Nick, or Peter, or Stephen, rather. Stephen is the character's name. Needs to get through to him and make him aware of his own naivete.
Stephen regards music as paper. It's notes on paper. And that's my job, is to translate that into something that came from the composer's mind. It's what we, all of us, have to do as musicians, is, you know, is to somehow take a step back from when the butterfly was pinned, you know, to when it was still flying. And that's what notes on, you know, manuscript is. The butterfly has been pinned, and you've got to find some way to get behind that before that moment happened into what was still fluid in the composer's mind and what he was thinking and what he was feeling and what he heard. And that's where the great musicians, that's what they're able to do. And so Mashkan's effort is to try to move Stephen back behind that technical precision that keeps him from any real feeling. And it's preventing him from that real feeling. And it's to find some way to get behind that. And one of the reasons, this technique, by the way, of pianists being accompanists and learning to sing and everything, all has to do with breathing. And it has to do with learning how to let music breathe. And when the breath is and how it happens. And music isn't muscle, it's breath. And it, like singing, isn't muscle, it's breath. And so you have to learn that, because that teaches you to let go. That teaches you to find your natural way into those notes, because they're just scratches on paper, you know, where they stand. And you find that an awful lot in a lot of musicians around who are just technically astounding, you know, and then you sit and listen for a while and you find that you're drifting and you're wandering away, and because they're not speaking, they're just playing, you know, and the music doesn't speak to anything. So Mashkan, his effort is to move Stephen back into himself, into his interior life, and begin to touch that so that he can bring that to his music.
The other thing I love about this play is that, and Stephen has a line about Mashkan. He said, "I thought you were in control of your life. You seem to be so much in control of your life." And we find out that neither man is in control of his life. And hence these secrets that they have kept. And once the secrets are revealed, we find out why they're not in control of their life. And because and originally Mashkan is the master teacher and in charge of the whole situation, but he really isn't. And Stephen is this award-winning piano prodigy, but then he reveals that he has always considered himself a mimic, that it's all technique, and as Keith just said, no passion, no feeling underneath it, and that's why he feels empty and needs to get his passion. But he comes to Europe thinking in a few lessons he'll get it. There'll be some magic formula that Schiller will give him that in a few lessons he'll be able to go back and continue concertizing with feeling this time. And Mashkan reveals what we all, I think, in the audience know, that it's not a quick fix, that you really have to understand what's behind the music.
What I love about just this play is that it's so grounded in reality. The playwright used the political situation in Austria, a real occurrence, and ugly feelings coming back up again, of you know, Nazism, right, raising his head. And then, of course, the true process of working at music. It's not just for the greatly gifted. Even the greatly gifted have to sacrifice great amounts of their lives and time to it. And you had mentioned your friendship with playwright Keith, and Did you discuss these things? Has he written other plays that deal with the same sort of real life situations?
Nothing like Old Wicked Songs. John and I discussed everything about this play, I think. Everything that was on his mind about it. And this was, first of all, it's a slightly autobiographical play. Not entirely. He was Stephen. He had a mashkan. He went to Vienna to study, things like that. So it's very much a part of his life. And as Terry said earlier, he's very much a playwright who is interested in the secrets that we hold. And so that's a big part of this play, the things that we keep back that we don't share. What is very fascinating to me about the play is how these two characters, John's brilliant stroke was the Dichte Liebe. In taking the exact songs, because we don't do the whole thing, we do certain songs, and they are songs that accurately mirror the journey of the relationship.
We haven't mentioned Heine yet.
No.
Heinrich Heine, the poet, yes. Yeah. Of these songs.
Right.
It's Heine's words that also lead us through this.
Unquestionably, yeah. But he's chosen those songs that mirror the journey of this relationship. And it's fascinating how the song cycle leads these two men to be each other's saviors and how they save each other's lives through music.
If you are singing in German, uh-huh. How does the audience know what the meaning of the
Because we song? Translate.
Okay.
So we translate. There's one song that isn't translated that I sing, but it's a private song. It's not about the relationship, but the ones that are about the relationship, we translate, and later in the play, we actually begin to sing in English instead of German. That comes from something that goes on in the play, which I don't want to bring up because the audience needs to be surprised by that.
Right.
It's beautifully written by the playwright where he, at Mashkan, says, "Now, Stephen, what do these, tell me, say these words, translate, and what do they mean?" And Stephen says, "I know exactly what they mean, the literal meaning." And he said, "Well, what's behind the meaning?" So the audience is never in a doubt as to what's being sung and what's being said and what's supposed to be felt that Stephen isn't feeling. And you find yourself, the audience that I've talked to, you find yourself wanting Stephen to understand the true passion behind these beautiful words that Heine has created. And you find yourself saying to yourself, "Go, Stephen, come on, understand what Mashkan's saying. We want you to succeed."
Nick, back to you. As someone fluent in jazz singing and jazz, how do you switch between worlds here? There's some things you might add as a jazz performer that really aren't appropriate in classical singing in Schumann.
Well, yes, there's not any improvising here or you know, I'm not going to change Schumann's notes, you know. That's as Keith was saying, those are sacred. But I think there are a certain number of experiences that I've had that I'm thankful for as a jazz musician in a jazz setting to feel music, truly feel music, and there, I think that's really what the similarity is, you know, and what, you know, allows people the ability to translate and switch from one to another is music is all the same, in my opinion. I mean, obviously there's stylistic differences, but the important thing behind them is the feelings and what message maybe each piece is sending. And I've been working on this music for a while now. Terry cast the show just under a year ago, and I've been meeting with Terry for quite a while about the character, but as well studying the music with professors at the School of Music at Western Michigan University, and diving deep into the translation. And prior to the rehearsal process of the show, I actually put on a little private recital featuring all of this music, which is in the show, to have that performance experience. And besides the deep emotion and feeling that drives these songs in the song cycle, there's also a complex portrayal of this music that is in Stephen's past. Because, and Terry spoke just briefly on this before, very early on in Stephen's career, he was a prodigy, and he found himself almost imitating artists in a way. And there's one scene in the play where Stephen plays the piano and plays all of these virtuosic piano pieces in the style of Horowitz, in the style of Alfred Brendel, and that is something I had to study for a while, and this wasn't a very quick process. I've been working on it for many months.
That's an enormous task. I mean, just to even
to say that I could ever play like Horowitz or Alfred Brendel, but
well, I mean, 10 seconds of Horowitz is a good month of work there.
Yeah.
So that is amazing. You've really put your whole self into this. I wonder, though, being a young man yourself, how this music will continue to affect your life, in your 30s and your 40s, and just getting to know it so intimately, how wonderful that will be for the rest of your life.
Yeah, well, I keep telling people that I never would have expected that a play is what completely transforms or just deepens my appreciation for this style of music. And it's been a very exciting experience, not only to see how my own training kind of relates to this style of music, but how art itself is all tied together. This wonderful script tied with, there's references to Klimt in the play and all different kinds of art and beauty and, This script is just a deep emotional experience for everybody involved, including the audience.
Old Wicked Songs runs through May 18th, and you can find out more right now at thegilmore.org or farmersalleytheater.com. Ich Grohle Nicht is a song from Dichterliebe that I think we'll listen to next. I don't know what part of the play this appears in, but it sounds like it has a... It's in a
big
portentous
part.
Yeah.
Big part.
Moment.
Huge. It's a song that occurs in both acts of the play. And it's a song that occurs when the relationship is at crisis. The translation of the song is, "I bear no grudge, although my heart may break."
Ich grolle nicht. Das Herz auch bricht, ewig verlorenes Lieb, ewig verlorenes Lieb, ich groll, wo elend bist, ich grolle.
Well, I can almost feel my heart breaking as I listen to this song, I Bear No Grudge, Although My Heart May Break. Oh, that's, and it's all encapsulated in 2 minutes in that short song. But as a whole, Dichterliebe takes you on a journey just like the play, Old Wicked Songs. Would someone explain the title, Old Wicked Songs?
Well, it's a little liberty that John took, because the actual translation is from the last song in the cycle, and the actual translation is those angry songs. And John changed it to wicked, and we use that also when we translate the song. Finally, at the end of the play, we use wicked instead of angry. But it was a liberty that he took. I think it's a possible translation of the word. And it works because it perks everybody's interest. Though it doesn't lead you to understand what the play is really about at all.
It's not a very revealing title.
No.
Keith, as the director of your own theater company in Philadelphia, how does it feel to be... is it demoted to an actor, or it's? I mean, you now take direction from Terry. Is this a?
Well, I act at my own theater as well. I never direct myself. There's always another director. So I don't. I don't know. It's kind of like what Nick does in the play about putting hats on. You know, it's just I leave my director hat at the door, and when I get into a situation like this, and I feel it's the actor's responsibility to fulfill a director's vision, unless you are so opposed to what is happening that, you know, you come to artistic blows about it and then you have to do something else. But other than that, I think it's the actor's responsibility to fulfill what he's asked to do to the best of his ability. And I found in this instance that was easy, smooth, and ultimately very rewarding in what we've come up with. I think the play moves very, very nicely. It works better in this setting, in this smaller setting, than it did in my theater, which happens to be considerably larger. But in this smaller setting, the intimacy enhances the play. You can feel people hanging on every word and gesture. You know that they can see every glance. They're going to get all of that, you know. So that's and that was incredibly intimidating to me at first, because it's so exposed.
To see people's kneecaps out of the side of your eye everywhere.
Absolutely. And I just thought, how am I going to keep my concentration with this? This is just... And it took about 4 days, 3 or 4 days. I feel exactly the opposite now. I mean, it's a very vulnerable place to be. It's very transparent. It's very exposed. And yet, that very exposure gives you an ability with nuance and subtleties and real conversational quality about the work that you don't get in a much larger space. So I was happily pleased with that.
I found that the closer I am to the artist, the more present I am and the more I pay attention. And somehow the level of trust also goes up. You're all in it together.
I mean, I won't go to a Broadway show if I can't sit within the first 10 rows. And it's going to cost me a lot of money. But I'm not going to sit up in the balcony or something. I just won't enjoy it. You know, it's that closeness that where you can see their eyes and you can feel there's something coming from them, and you can feel that is irreplaceable in live theater.
Nick, your experience, how has this changed you as an actor, and do you plan to continue pursuing a role such as this, acting and music?
Well, acting is always something that I've been interested in, and I started acting in middle school, I suppose, and I continued on into high school, and I really enjoyed the different productions that I did, and forensics was a big part of the different roles that I had to portray. Forensics, competitive speaking and acting, not the science. And then in college... I got really busy, and I suppose I just didn't have the time that I would have liked to devote to theater. And so this is actually the first role that I've done in about 4 or 5 years, and it's been a very rewarding and meaningful role to come back to. Not come back to, I haven't done it before, but to come back to acting. And I would love to do more acting in the future. a lot of people have been asking me, what are your plans for the future after seeing the show and after knowing some of the other things that I've dabbled in over the past couple of years? And I have to say, I don't know what my plans are, because my options are open at this point. I'm happy to be, you know, playing this role and kind of experimenting and doing a variety of different things aside from this production.
And I would say that any producer that wants to do this play might find out about our production. And it's hard for me to believe that this is the last time either of these artists will be playing either of these roles. Because all of the other actors who've played the role of Stephen, I found out in the audition process, have not actually played the piano. They, Mashkan has, the various Mashkans have always played, but the other Stevens have used the Yamaha Disclavier, which plays itself. And I figured if I never considered that as an option in our production for obvious reasons.
Well, I understand that. It's sort of like actors putting horse riding on their resumes when they've never gotten on a horse.
Exactly.
But Nick can do both.
Well, it's interesting. Some audience members have questioned it for both of them because they can't see the keyboard. The way the piano is located on the set.
They need to face the audience. Yeah.
Yeah. And they've asked me, you know, are they really playing? And I said, yes, they're both playing live. The Steinway, it's live, not fake, not recorded, not taped.
It just sounds like, as we said before, the perfect play to present during the Gilmore International Keyboard Festival, a play that deepens our understanding of the artistic process, and a play in which we can come to care very deeply about two seemingly opposed characters who end up having
more in common than you would ever imagine.
Absolutely. Well, Terry, Nick, and Keith, it's been a great pleasure spending an hour with you this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.